Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whew. Good morning.
Yeah.
It is Thursday, and this is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike Bo, Tiff hanging out with you. Why are you looking at me?
I think everybody's wondering the same thing, Tiff.
Did you Peloton this morning?
Actually, I didn't, but I got good news this morning.
Uh-oh.
Well, I am sore. I've been doing two workouts a day,
so I did
not do it this morning. I have a leg day this afternoon.
Is that the good news?
But you're asking because I seem... like
you just look like you rode the Peloton. You've got the Peloton glow.
Peloton cold shower. No, that was not the recipe this morning. Mm. But I'm getting a special delivery.
Uh-oh.
So.
Is it from America?
Dude, I was going to ask if it was from France. I was like, yeah, is anything French made?
Is my mood that volatile?
No.
Do you want to say it?
I would say volatile is not the word I would use.
Volatile is probably a good word.
I was going to use obvious.
I got a lot of sleep last night again. And I have some connections that I made in France. And there's a product that I like. They only have it over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be shipped. It's already being shipped my way.
There you go.
That makes me feel happy.
It does make a person feel chipper.
So,
not everybody's the same. Different things make different people happy. You do you, boo.
Whoa. Big pause. I coming up and mic'd up today, I'm going to tell you guys what I did yesterday. The first part of it is, though, we went and took pictures with Santa. I'm Scrooge, but it's probably my least favorite day of the year. Like, absolute least favorite day of the year to go take pictures.
Wait, where'd you, like, what mall? Or was it a mall?
Well, I'm not going to say where it was because some things didn't go our way.
Okay.
So I'm not going to smash them. But it was, it was not, it's just stressful.
So were they crying? Kids crying or the Santa wasn't pleasant?
They're terrified. The wife wants them in certain pajamas and just the whole freaking thing is just brutal.
Can I say...
I'm sure you're going to tell me what I should have told the kids.
Yes.
No, I'm not. I'm going to pre-sympathize with you.
Yeah.
I love my wife to death.
Yes.
And she is very
holiday oriented.
Sentimental around the holidays.
She just like a picture has to be made of everything.
Yes.
And I am already.
Well, yeah, she's pregnant over Christmas. Of course,
but
she wants.
No, he's talking about when the baby comes. I'm telling you something, Tiffany. This was way pre-pregnancy. Like everything we do has a photo shoot.
In
some point of it. And by the way,
ding.
I am doing my best to be patient with little hormonal thing, normal things that happen when people, because I don't get it, but I understand that there's a lot going on physically, but everything turns into a photo shoot, so I am already somewhat dreading, and it's for me it's one of the things where like nope, just one, because if you got two of them, that's when it really turns into man to man, and I'm a zone coverage corner.
Tiff, and you'll like this part of it. This is what stressed me out probably the most, and I don't want to give all of it away, but we had to take the dog. Like, my wife was adamant that the dog was part of the Christmas photo, and I'm like...
Was he not having
just
it?
Actually, he was really good. A little bit of CBD and the old chicken nuggets never hurt any dog.
No.
But he was really good. Now, the people working the photo booth at said place, there was one person that was not happy that there was a dog there. Although there's a sign that says dogs welcome. And so, yeah, I'm glad it's over with. Let's just put it that way.
So you still gave them your business?
Well, you know what's funny is we got the photos. They weren't what you wanted. And I made some changes that my wife is going to like this morning when she wakes up. So I'll tell you all about that mic'd up. But that's for later on.
Okay. All right. Well, this hour is brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Can't wait to hear what happened at the Santa Fe.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Falcons and Vikings this weekend, Kirk Cousins' former team. But what happened last week against the Los Angeles Chargers? Well, Kirk Cousins, 4-interception game. He talked about trying to just do too much.
You know, trying to make something happen, you know, is can sometimes get you in trouble. And I think that happened certainly on Sunday. And you got to let the game come to you and let the plays happen as they present themselves. And so that's important. And I think I learned that again, as I have many times, you know, was reminded of that again on Sunday. And so that's just part of playing, is being able to discern, you know, when to make those tight window throws, when not to, and when to throw an opportunity ball and when not to. And it's never perfect, but you certainly try to make it as good as you can.
Did you catch the opportunity ball? Opportunity ball.
Yeah, because I think he threw
a word.
I think he threw. Well, do you think the interception was an opportunity ball, or the one in the end zone?
The one in the end zone. I don't know. If it wasn't an opportunity ball, I don't know what it was.
But I've went back and watched that play a few times, and I keep hearing people say, and I've listened to, and I've read stuff that's that, you know, and people, it should have had Bijan right in front of him. I don't even think that was the play. I thought that the one time I think that you could use maybe the tight end, I thought that would have been the opportunity ball there. Just throw it up, and if anyone can high point it, the 6'6" guy could. I don't know. Like you and I have went back and rewatched the game, and it's a bad thing when I don't know what to say. Like when I can't think of anything to say.
Wow.
It means I'm stumped with what we saw.
This only happens once.
Yeah. Blue moon.
Yeah.
What you're trying to say is the only person that had an opportunity at that ball was about three of the Chargers standing in the end zone, that any three of them could have caught that. But no, I mean, I think that, look, Kirk's always fair, right? It's always fair in the way he assesses his own play. He knows it was bad. It's not like he's out there blaming receivers or blaming coaches or blaming concepts. He's just simply, hey, I got to be more calculated to make, tight window throws and opportunity balls. And that's sincerely, if you are rooting for Kirk Cousins, that's all you can ask of him right now. Now, the guys from Dukes and Bell did a good job kind of asking about where Kirk's at, asking about, you know, Michael Penix and a couple of other things yesterday that we'll listen to coming up. But just as far as Kirk's mindset, he sounds like he's doing his best at this point, given what happened on Sunday.
And it sounds, not that he never sounded sincere before, but you can kind of just hear it in his voice. If I'm just going off of that, just the disappointment from Sunday and how, if anyone knows that they need to correct some things, it's him.
Yeah, I know that for most of us, we don't get to go back and watch our work days on film. But we try to relive like something went wrong, right? If you were in a sales meeting and you maybe flubbed a presentation or something, right? Or like for me, like yesterday we did an interview and I didn't like one of my questions. And I was afterwards, I was like, man, that sucked. And you can go back and listen and hear it. It has got to be cringe when you go back and watch film and you just were horrible.
You watched clips on TV of yourself on TV.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure he's sitting in the room and he's seeing the all 22 of like what's actually happening and what he did. And
that's,
you're like,
gotta feel brutal. Oh. And
imagine watching that in front of teammates. Like, Mike, what is that like? When you screw up so bad and you go back and have to watch it with others?
Tell you something, in college, Saban does good, bad, and the ugly, and it's like when it's bad, he's cussing you out, and when it's ugly, he doesn't even say anything, but obviously wants to highlight the good, yeah. So I think my senior year, we were playing LSU, and I gave up a safety on a sack. I think Nevis was the guy's name, the defensive tackle, I got just completely swam moved and gave up a sack, and the guy sacked Greg McElroy in the end zone, and the entire crowd is like looking at me like, what? And Saban put the tape on in the film room after we won the game, thankfully. Saban puts the tape on, doesn't say anything. And I'm like, oh, my God, I want to crawl under this desk. I want to dig a hole through the concrete floor and jump in the hole and put the carpet back over where I was just sitting. Like, there is no worse feeling than being around your teammates who you know blood, sweat, and tears for years to get to these points in these games. Thank goodness we won. Kirk obviously cannot say the same things this weekend watching film.
Probably made you guys stronger.
In the end, it does, Tiff. Right? In the end, it's called accountability.
It is. When we come back here on the morning shift, well, the head coach, Raheem Morris, he joined our Dukes and Bell. You're not going to want to miss this. That's next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, and the Falcons coming off of a three-game slide now after their most recent loss to the Los Angeles Chargers on Sunday. So when you look at those last three losses, Kirk Cousins, zero touchdowns, six interceptions. Now, Coach Raheem Morris, he joined Dukes and Bell, and Carl straight up, can I call him Carl on this show? Should I just call him Dukes? Dukes straight up asked him what's going on.
Duke, obviously, he didn't play well last week. You can't hide that fact. I don't think we do. I think we come out right away. I think he said it. Actually, I know he said it. He said it right after the game. I said it right after the game. And it's just like, you know, those things happen when you play tough games and you have tough losses and you throw four interceptions. It should be hard to win a football game. You know, I was more proud of the fact that the guys gave us a chance to be in the football game in the first place, because that could have got ugly. You know, when you do things like that, you throw pick sixes and you throw four interceptions and it doesn't go your way. But I got a lot of confidence in our quarterback as well, right? I got a lot of confidence that he can bounce back and he'll be ready to go. He's had tough games before. He's had tough stretches before. We've been in that spot, and he's been in that spot. And I'm very confident that he'll be able to bounce out of it and come out of it and get us back. We're going where he needs to go, right? He's done a lot of carrying for us this year. He's won a lot of big games. He's thrown for 500 yards. He's won game winning drives. He's did it in a 2 minute. He's done a lot of really good things. And I got a lot of confidence that he can go out there, gather himself, be ready to play, and get us back on track, right? You know, you don't want to lose the fact that you still have the pin. You're still 6-6. You're still tied or got a half game of lead, however you want to look at it, on first place. And you want this guy to finish what he started. And I got a lot of confidence he'll go out there and be able to do that.
And, Coach, we echo those sentiments because he was the focal point. Everybody from Bijan to guys on the defensive side talk about his leadership, the intangibles, everything he brings here is like almost like another coach. Saw it on the sideline myself in Tampa. Do you give him his space? Do you talk to him? Does Zach, do you sit down with him and say, how can we help you?
He's pretty good with the routine and the rhythm that he has. You know, normally he always comes and talks, and he has the ability to compartmentalize his thoughts and bring them in and be able to say it to the people he needs to say it to, whether it's myself, whether it's Zach, whether it's TJ. Win, lose, or draw, you know, might I add. And throw for 500 yards or not, you know, he's going to be able to put all those things together and see what he left out there. You know, it's always the glass is always half full when you're talking about playing the quarterback position, and he's always that way regardless. And then having a tough game on things that he knows he can complete or he knows he can get done or he knows he can execute better, that's always going to be a little tougher on you when you're that hard on yourself and that critical on yourself. And we all need a little help sometime to be brought back. And, like, that's what we all kicking. That's what his teammates kicking. That's what we. That's our job. That's our job to pick him up. That's our job to bring him back and let him go through his process this week. Right? The minute you go out there on the field and get the new game plan, and you go out there and you're able to execute things and you get back in the huddle, it's time to go to work. And you got to shut all that stuff out. And it's a part of the mental toughness that comes along with playing this game.
Coach Raheem Morris joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dukes and Bell, as we visit with Coach each and every week exclusively here on the show. As we talk about coordinators, first time defensive coordinator, when you got that opportunity, and then you go back and watch a game, you'd be like, damn, I should have ran that, or, you know, you're critiquing yourself. And I'm wondering the process with Zach being a first-time coordinator. Last week, Coach, we're running the ball, killing him, like B is going off, and we're like, let's keep running the ball. And I felt like we went away from it. And in those moments, I know you're allowing your coaching staff to have the freedom to do what they need to do to coach. But as you guys review and look back at stuff, how do you view that, and what do you tell him as a first-time coordinator?
Yeah, it's always hard to say, even when you're a first-time coordinator. I don't care how long you've been doing it. There's always going to be calls you got out there that you don't like, that you're going to want back. You know, and it's hard to say when you run the ball 37 times last week that you want to do it more. You know, like, what are some things left out there in the run game? Yes, right? Do you want your average to look a little bit better because you want to break one of them things off and absolutely run one for 40 yards to make that thing even look better, to not have to even call the next plays? Yes. Like, are there times where you open up things in the run game where it looks good in the play action pass and something doesn't go your way? There's no doubt about it. Like, when you call those plays, you're hoping and you feel like they can get executed. And then when you get it out there and it's something that looked that you're not personally, that you didn't personally get or you didn't want, yes, you want to pull it back, and you can't always go get it out of air without spending timeouts or using some of those things. So there's always going to be things that he's going to want back. And this has been all season. This has been right from the beginning. Like, you know, when you don't call it, you're on the side. You're the best second guesser in the world. I've been there for a long time, you know, looking at Monty Kiffin, being around some of the great coordinators around with Jim Haslett and some of those type of guys. You're a great second caller. And then when you go do it and you're making these calls, and then after the game, you got to reflect for yourself and say, man, I would want that back, or I didn't like that call, or I wish I had this play call back, or whatever the case may be. And I know Zach does that every single week, you know, no matter what, just like Kurt, no matter whether it's the 500 yards or whether it's not a great game and we had the interceptions, right? But there was a lot of really good looks out there. We left a lot of – and things would look a lot differently if we were to complete some of the balls, the opportunity balls that we had out there that we didn't get done, like in that first drive to Mooney.
Coach Raheem Morris, guys, live inside the Ticketmaster Studios up here at Flowery Branch. There are Hall of Fame quarterbacks that have been benched, and they've had great careers. What was it ever an intent, ever moment in that game where you say, look, Kirk is a pro, but he's having a bad day in the office. Maybe I bring Penix out and see if he can give us a spark, even though the game was still because it was a one-possession game, that wasn't even in your mind?
The game's just way too close, and he's just way too one play away to go out there and win it for us. If you just pan back just short time ago, we played Philadelphia Eagles. We're at that place. It's not going great on offense. We're running the football well. We're doing really good. We're holding them on defense. We're keeping it tight enough. And then all of a sudden, boom, lightning strikes. You hit Mooney on a zero. You go for one on fourth down. You get a fourth and two. You get that one. Then, boom, they go zero. You hit Mooney on a zero across the middle of the field. Touchdown. You get the ball in the last drive of the game, and he goes right down the field, and he scores a touchdown. Right? There's been also games where we played in New Orleans where we didn't score an offensive touchdown and won the game. We scored on special teams, and we also scored on defense. Right? So this team is built to win. And no matter what they want to do, and it's not necessarily coming at the expense of pointing the finger or blaming a guy when you want to bench him, right? A lot of times in this profession, we pull the triggers too quickly on some of these guys that got just intangibles to go out there and win football games. And we've seen them do that in these moments here already in this short season that we've had together. And every time he's out there, it gives you belief that he can go out there and win it.
Yeah, it's interesting as we talk about all the things that played out in our last game. And we are going to talk about the Vikings, guys,
because I get the excitement. I started it. I drafted Penix. I completely understand where you guys are coming from. But like,
you got an insurance policy. So that's like, part of it.
I'm not going to tell you guys. Yeah. You guys are not wrong for feeling that way. It was the excitement that we had for wanting to go get this guy and this young man and bring him in here and learn from a crafty veteran, a guy that can go out there and win football games. But it doesn't change the fact that Kurt has us in first place and Kurt has us in position to go out there and really win the South. And it's all within arm's reach.
Woo, man.
Plus, people forget. I know the last three games, okay, they are what they are, but the way they started the season, the way things were going for Kirk Cousins of this team, minus the week one loss, but after that, right?
Yeah, well,
I would ask you, what people are you talking about?
Oh, no.
What people?
I'm talking, you know what I'm doing?
The turntables.
I'm talking about the people that you're talking about.
Yeah, oh. I don't know about that.
I would tell you that those people...
Maybe some talking heads on TV.
What's the old saying? You can't see more than... you can't see anything that's not right in front of you or whatever. There's like...
Kind I know of some, where you're going.
Some kind of old saying like... Tunnel vision...
there you go.
Fans have tunnel vision, Tiff. And they only see the last thing you did. You know, just like the... If we talk about Georgia next segment, I say something that's not... That they're not going to win. All the good things I've said the entire time I've been on a host at the station or working at the station about Georgia and Kirby Smart are out the window, and I'm a clown and a fanboy for Florida, and I hate Georgia. Right. That's what they're all going to say. And that's how fans feel about players' performances. You're only as good as the last thing you put out there to them, and that's how they view things. That's how and media, in a lot of ways, represents that, and that's how they write, talk, and act about said players.
Well, and I think, this is something I always struggle with on the player side of it in the locker room, because you as a player, you look at the season as a whole, right? But I understand on this side of it, you are hyper-focused at 1 o'clock on Sunday, right? Every media guy is there ready to look at the first formation and how far walked up the corners are after the bye week and, you know, how many times Kirk runs play action. And when things don't go according to plan like you think they should, you tend to hyper-focus on that. And look, it's not just a loss. It's three losses and a bye week. And so I think that – and Raheem obviously was very receptive to that. I thought it was interesting. And guys, I've been around these quarterback battles before. I've been around, you know, teams that are, hey, do you play the backup? When do you play the backup? You don't play the backup normally when the quarterback isn't playing well or when you think he's not winning games. You play the backup quarterback when the starter is actively losing games for you, all right, and actively losing the season for you. So I think that's the you know, kind of have to weigh, you know, what Raheem is saying, because I think that he's looking at Kirk going, he probably lost that game, right? But if he starts losing the season, he mentioned they were in first place by a half game because of tiebreaker. I hear in his voice that if they start losing the season because of Kirk, then that's when you have to look at making decisions.
No, that's exactly what I heard within that too. You're going to stick with him. There's not going to be a Michael Penix sighting. I don't believe this coming weekend. I think it's going to take a lot more than that. As you just highlighted, yeah, for them to actually end up making a switch.
Yeah, and the word insurance policy was used in that interview. And I just don't think that they view Michael Penix as an insurance policy.
I don't either.
I think they view him as a future. And if a major injury happened, then the future would be now. But I don't think it's like, oh, well, if this guy sucks today, we got this other guy and we'll see what he is. Because you don't know. Michael Penix has only played in a couple of situations in the NFL, and they were both mop-up duty, and so to speak, the game was out of hand. So you don't know what he's going to be like in those situations in the NFL, because we've seen clutch players go to the NFL and not play well in clutch situations.
I think it's the connotation that you're putting with the term, yeah, insurance policy.
I think when you drafted him, it would have been fine to say you drafted him as an insurance policy. You don't know what he's cut. You know what Kirk's doing, yeah, off the Achilles. You really don't know what he's going to be with this team or what he's with, mm-hmm, with Zach. I think
now
that's
that I
fair.
Think about it, yeah.
I disagree. I think they drafted him to say we're going to let this guy sit because we think Kirk's the next 2 years. That's what the contract tells me.
I hear both of you, but I think when you think of a backup quarterback, that is what you think of just in general because it's a backup quarterback.
Yeah, but I mean that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
When we come back, we are a day removed from an early signing period for some high school players trying to make their way to the college ranks. And there's also been some shakeups coaching-wise in the college ranks as well. We will let you know about it when we come back here and give you the headlines for college football on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift, and yesterday was a pretty big day for some high school football players, especially in the area, around the country, as they try to gear up to take the steps to the next level. So we had what was kind of an early signing period, early signing day, unfold yesterday.
Yeah, the most Georgia recruits that Kirby Smart has signed in his tenure. You're still waiting on five-star defensive lineman Justice Terry to make his decision coming up on Friday. But 21 Georgians signing with the University of Georgia. And to give you some insight of that, on the flip side, Kalen DeBoer's class over to Alabama, the least amount of Alabama players I think they've ever signed, and they didn't sign one top 10 in-state prospect over Alabama. It's just different recruiting beds, and there's so much talent to be had in the state of Georgia. So Kirby Smart continues on that trajectory, man. He's killing it.
That is wild.
Right, I know. Auburn, I believe, signed all the top 10 prospects from the state of Alabama. Bama ended up with, I think, 7 from California, which is just nuts. But I think, you know, look, those are the relationships that Kalen DeBoer had coming into it. So it is what it is. But it's just, again, Kirby, 21 from the state of Georgia. It's the most he's ever signed in his tenure at Georgia. And I think that just speaks to the long-term relationships that he's built around the state.
And you wonder why they're not on this list that I'm taking a look at from CBS Sports' Andrew Ivins. He has the winners and losers of signing day, and he has Oregon as a winner. They have Texas, Florida, South Carolina. Also on this list is Georgia Tech. So I thought that was significant.
For sure.
The best signing day class in the history of Georgia Tech was, this is going to be this incoming class with Brent Key. You know what's funny is you were talking about Georgia and you mentioned Auburn. Florida jumped from in the 50s to the top, some would say 10. Some
yeah,
have them
they ranked
10.
Them 10 on this. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know where they're ranked in the SEC?
In seventh.
Eight, depending on which site you go, seven or eight.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, yeah. Oh, 247, 247 has, now you're using CBS, which had them at a 10.
I think it's 247. I think it is
247 had them around like 11 or 10, and they literally have them seven, though, in the SEC, because nationally, this is the way that 247 has the rankings. Texas won. They jumped from three. Alabama fell to two. Georgia went from two to three. Then Oregon, Ohio State. Then Auburn, Michigan, LSU, A&M, Tennessee, Florida. So you had a boom, right? And you're still seven or eight in the SEC. But the reality is these classes bear out differently. Guys transfer. But that's still a big day for a program. But it's still middle of the road in the SEC. Now, how you coach them and how your schedule plays out in 2 years, all of those things come in, too.
There is a mathematic equation. And by the way, Georgia, Florida made a good run at Ryan Montgomery, the Georgia signee. Ended up signing with Georgia, but Florida evidently made that very hotly contested there at the last minute.
They almost got Dallas Wilson, who Oregon ended up securing a five-star receiver.
Yeah, so they were hot at it yesterday. I don't think there was a ton. I think there was one flip to Florida State, but I think they also got somebody back from Florida State for this Georgia class. And, you know, there is a, to your point about it being a top 10 class or whatever, there is a scientific equation, or there at least there used to be, about how far down you could fall with your last four, the average of your last four signing classes, and to whether or not you could win a national title. There is a distinct, like, it's like, oh, you know, recruiting's overrated. It is probably on an individual basis, but team-wise, there is a straight-up, like, equation you have to have. You have to be in the top 10 for the last 4 years, or you have zero shot at a national title.
When I think, you know where I think it's overrated, and it's not a lot of class, but if you got, like, let's just say you got two or three five stars, right? And then a main portion of your class would be made up of three stars. You might be higher up a list than, because of the way that these people and they're recruiting ranking sites rank it. And then you could say it's overrated because one of those five stars might be hurt, one might be really good, and the other might transfer or something, or one might be a bust, whatever. To me, you want to be in that mix of one, at least one five-star class with a plethora of four stars. Because, dude, and Tiffany, there just might be like, there might be one little thing that's evaluated that makes a guy from a five to a four, depending on who's ranking him. And in reality, you might develop that player into a five-star. Hell, David Pollock's a three-time All-American. He was a three-star. Yeah. Were you a...
I was a four-star.
Four-star, and you became an All-American. So, see? And a national champion.
Well, no.
And Atlanta Falcon.
I think there's a lot, like I said, on an individual basis, like just looking at one recruit, like to me, the stars mean nothing. But when you start getting to the overall class, that's when recruiting really hits home in a big day yesterday.
All right, let's get to some news here with Oklahoma. They've got a lot of people leaving, it seems. They fired the state of Oklahoma. They fired their offensive and defensive coordinators after posting their worst winning percentage since 1991. Oh, yeah.
No, the Pokes.
That's
No, I was going to say, Mike Gundy, this is the I'm firing everybody tour.
How does he still keep surviving?
Well, he's an alumni.
I know.
He was the OC there, if I'm not mistaken, when Les was there. He took over when Les left for LSU. And there's a lot of money in the program.
Yeah.
But,
ton.
It, you know, 8-5, a 10-3 here, that's kind of what they are. I mean,
It's what they've been even when I worked in Oklahoma back in 2011 or something like that. Well, I just think also it's Mike Gundy. When you think of Oklahoma State, that's who you think of. I don't believe that he's going to leave that program until he's ready to leave and he wants to retire.
Well, but to both of y'all's point, you say that's kind of what they are, and you say you go all the way back to when you worked there, that's what they were under Mike Gundy. But at what point does the money in the program go, you know what, we'd like a little bit more than this. Like, this is cool. It's a seven-win season.
I think it's like a comfortable. I think it's like an Oklahoma thing. Yeah,
I don't know. When you said Oklahoma to start the segment, I was like, well, they fired their offensive coordinator like 6 weeks ago because they were so bad. They don't deal with that up there.
I feel like it's like, but even like Brett Venables, right? He had a little bit of his struggles. I feel like it's like Oklahoma's just a state of like tradition or something. I feel like, and that's why you don't see a whole lot
close.
Of like
we hold ours close.
Yeah, that's why you see a lot of the guys at Oklahoma in particular get promoted up. Right, you had Lincoln Riley who was there, and then
that loss still stings. So, I'm still hurting over Bama losing 2 weeks ago.
You know what could force the issue is when if Iowa State wins the Big 12, and then you come out this year. Now let's fast forward real quick to 2025. And you have another terrible year, because that's what they had this year, terrible. And Colorado or Iowa State or one of those teams wins or plays for the Big 12 title again.
And I'm at the president. Okay.
Then it might be like, hey, we have as much money. We actually have more money than those two programs left from T. Boone Pickens. We should be doing that. We need more. That could be the only thing that put pressure.
I just thought there was I thought that we were there this year. I thought we were there this year.
I don't
think
you're there this year.
No. Well, let's go to some Oklahoma news, because quarterback Jackson Arnold is entering the transfer portal. He is a five-star prospect, a former five-star prospect. He started 9 games for the Sooners this season. It was kind of a roller coaster ride for him, though, wasn't it? He's a starter, then he's pulled for a couple games, then he's back as a starter, and then...
Yeah, remember that five-star I said plays like a two-star, like at the bust? That's kind of Jackson Arnold. He couldn't see anything. He wasn't able to read what was going on downfield. Everything was short. He could move with his legs. He had the other five-star come in, dethroned him. Then that didn't go well. A fresh start might be good, but he's going to have to develop a lot no matter where he goes.
We've heard from Coach Raheem Morris. We've heard from quarterback Kirk Cousins. Now it's time to hear from the OC, Zach Robinson. He doesn't think Cousins has been that bad over this 3-game stretch. You'll hear why next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.